the theme of today, or the notion of today, of this being Orange Shirt Sunday makes it a little bit difficult in knowing what to address. And so the words that kept coming back to me were treaty people. And the reminder that we are all treaty people, whether we're settlers or we're indigenous, we're all connected through the treaties, whether we like it or not. And there are many things not to like about the present, and there always has been. There has never been a perfect present, of which I'm aware. I have had a couple of days it came close. The day I got married was the happiest day of my life, not just because I got married, but because everything went the way it was supposed to. It was extraordinary. Our wedding started on time to the minute. That was my only promise I made to the people coming. The rest of it turned over to other people. It was great. So, but on the whole, the life that we live is not perfect, and we know that. And God knows it as well, because when we look at the readings for this morning that Guy did for us, in Jeremiah, where Jeremiah buys this field, the field, in a sense, is irrelevant. The purpose of it in here, at least for us, is God, through Jeremiah, is telling the people of Israel that their current unpleasant situation will not last forever. And right towards the end of the reading, it says, "For this, what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says, houses, fields, and vineyards will again be bought in this land." It's a message of hope. And these days, hope is not, well, as my dad might say, hope is not thick on the ground. Many of us live lives of hope, and we try to. We try to be optimistic, and we have many things for which to be hopeful. But the world itself is not giving us a lot of reason to hope. There's conflict, and there's this everything being turned into one or the other. You're either 100% this or 100% that. There's no room for nuance. There's no room for people to converse, even, it seems. And hopeless as we might feel, and as Canadians, I mean, we have so much compared to many, but we still have that sense. This message that Jeremiah brings to us, a message of hope, is saying that a time will come when the things that are normal in life, that are part of life, the buying and selling of fields and all the things that go into it, will be there again. It was a very direct message to the people of Israel, who were really in a tough spot, but it's a message to us as well, that we don't have to live in this is how it will always be, or maybe it will get worse. It's tempting, I know, and I think I've mentioned this before, but a number of years ago, I read a fairly comprehensive study, one of those longitudinal studies that they do over a group of people over decades. And they were looking at things that predicted early death. And they found that optimists, on average, lived 7 years longer than pessimists. And at that time, I was a thoroughgoing pessimist, because I thought, if you're a pessimist, you only get good surprises. You know, you're never surprised by the awful. You're expecting the awful. And I looked at that and I thought, maybe the occasional good surprise isn't enough. And so I've been working on this, like, literally for decades, to the point where now people frequently that I work with often say, "You're an optimistic person." And I'm kind of surprised that it's actually started to take. And I'm not optimistic in some Pollyanna sense that everything will be fine for everybody, because I know it won't. We continue to live in a fallen world. Human beings continue to do things that we wish they wouldn't, for all kinds of reasons. And one of the biggest ones that Timothy addresses is this greed. "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." We often hear this misremembered as money is the root of all evil, and money is the root of nothing. That's like saying a screwdriver is a root of all evil. Money is a tool. It's just a thing. Well, it's an imaginary thing, really, because, you know, like the, you take out your fancy plastic money that some other countries don't understand how it works. Don't put it through the dryer, by the way. It can cause real problems. But, like, that's a representation. So, like, money is just this idea that we've all agreed on. And the quotation isn't that money is the problem. It's the love of money, or the love of power, or the love of control. It's the love of those things. In this case, the love of, like, money stands in for all of those things, because that's what money does for us. If we have enough money, we can control people, we can own things, we can do all kinds of good and bad. There are lots of very wealthy people who are doing wonderful things. The best thing for the philanthropic world was when Jeff Bezos got tired of his wife. And the in the divorce settlement, she got, I can't remember how many billions of dollars. She's already given away more than half of it. There's no foundation. There's no forms to fill out. She hears about something of value, and she goes and says, how much do you need? And she gives it. There's no strings. There's no reports. There's nothing. It's extraordinary. This is someone who does not seem to have the love of money. So they do exist, you know, and money is never the problem. The idea that money will buy you security against everything is a problem, because it doesn't. And then when suddenly something goes wrong, and there was no amount of money, there was no amount of money in the world that could keep Haley, my daughter, from having to have a significant operation because of cancer. If I was a multi-billion, if I was a trillionaire, that doesn't change a thing. And most of the things, or at least many of the things that really matter, just aren't amenable to money. And so if we start living our lives as Paul talks about people who are doing it this way, who are desperate for things, who are spending their money on themselves and all of that, Paul says to Timothy, let these people know that they need to be doing good. They need to be rich in good deeds, be generous and willing to share. And then they will lay up treasures as a firm foundation. They will lay up non-tangible things. I always heard that, or remember hearing it as, lay up treasures in heaven where they will last forever. And I think, okay, sure. But one of the most sort of cut and dried statements I've ever heard about this whole thing is somebody who said, you know, I've never seen a U-Haul on the back of a hearse. You know? Yeah, I'm sure there's one out there somewhere. I don't know if you're familiar with the seems like a day to tell stories. There was a man, incredibly wealthy, so it's said, who worked out a way to turn all of his wealth into gold. And he had it in his backpack, specially built, that he carried, and he was buried with it. And when he arrived at the gates where St. Peter was there, because, of course, St. Peter is always there in these kinds of stories, and St. Peter says, okay, you can come in, but you got to leave the backpack behind. He goes, what? No. I have to bring this with me. I have to bring this with me. I want all of this. Peter says, well, what is it? He said, well, look. So Peter opens up the backpack and looks at it and said, you brought paving to heaven? You know, streets of gold, and you think about it. I mean, I like that story for all kinds of reasons. The theological point, if you really want to jam one in there, is that we often misunderstand what is of value. And that's true. When I was young, the things that I thought were valuable, I was just talking to somebody about this. The last time my self-esteem was wrapped up in a car, I was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s, 1975 Thunderbird, 460, four barrel. You let that thing go and you could almost see the gas gauge go down. But it was big, it was classy and fast. It was all of those things. You couldn't pay me to have that car now, except as a on a pedestal somewhere as a statue. I wouldn't drive that today. The emissions on that thing, fuel economy, all that. No, it's terrible. It's a different time. But sometimes we get caught up in the things that we want. And there's nothing wrong with things. I don't want us to get a, to leave with this idea that poverty is a goal. We see over and over again in Scripture, particularly in the Gospels, there's a privileged place for the poor, but not that we should go into that poverty. It's that we should pay attention to those people, and we should do what we can to minister to people in poverty. We shouldn't pursue it ourselves. Very few people are called to a vow of poverty, and they tend not to be Presbyterians. That's not part of our tradition. There are other traditions that have that, and it's certainly fine, but that's not what we have, and that's not what we're to pursue. And when we look at our gospel lesson, where we have the rich man and Lazarus, well, first of all, the story isn't any kind of picture of what the end of whatever looks like. This isn't a picture of what happens after you die. It's a story. Jesus is not saying that this is what happens. He's saying that this is, think of things in this way. And so the rich man and the poor man die at the same time. And the poor man, for whatever reason, is with Abraham. The rich man is not. And the rich man finds out why. And he says, you had all these good things in your life, and you never did anything with them. You walked past Lazarus every day. You gave him nothing when you could, and now you want something from him. Well, he can't. There's this chasm. And then he asked to send Lazarus to his brothers so they'd understand. And Abraham says, if you don't act on what you know, on what you've heard, on those things that you've seen, then even somebody coming back from the dead isn't going to change how you think about things, which is a little chilling in its own way. But at the same time, it reminds us, all of these stories together remind us that the world we live in now is anything but perfect, although a time will come when justice with grace and mercy will be done. But in both our New Testament lessons, the root cause is people who are indifferent to others. Because that's the problem with the love of money, is because if you love money, you don't have room to love people. You don't have room to love the environment. And on this Orange Shirt Sunday, if you come from one side of the ocean to this side of the ocean, and your only goal is wealth, you're going to do anything to get it. And we, as treaty people, are still bearing the scars of that. Because as settlers, we haven't escaped unscathed. We've lost out on all of the tremendous goodness of a different orientation towards the Creator and towards the earth that our indigenous siblings have. And our ancestors, if we want to look at it that way, the people who came over, paid no attention to that, said that's worthless, we don't care about that. And so instead of taking what could have happened by saying, what do you think of how the world works? What do you think of land and ownership and companionship and all of those things? We came over and said, we're right and you're wrong. Even before we listened. And so even now, we're working hard, at least many of us are, to try and recapture that sense of a different way of looking at things. And a better way, in many ways. Looking at things from the perspective of, what do I have that you need? rather than what I have is not enough. Changes us on the inside. One of the best things about being in a spiritual community of any sort, whether it's a Presbyterian one or United one or whatever it is that it takes us out of ourselves and reminds us that there's more than just our own concerns, important as they are, because I'm not trying to minimize our concerns. I'm not saying that we don't matter, because of course we do. But we missed something. And we have an opportunity now and then, as treaty people, to get some of that stuff back when we can. The problem with reconciliation is that it's so big. And I think, what can I do to be part? Like, how can I reconcile generations of cultural genocide? Well, I'm not called to fix all that. What I'm called to do is live a life of openness to what the indigenous people who were here first know better than I do, and learn from them. I had the great good fortune of going to school with now Dr. Ray Aldred. He's a faculty at Vancouver School of Theology and teaches in Presbyterian school out there, a class now and then. He's a Cree man from northern Alberta. And I had a chance to get some of his insights, and I'm a better person because of it. And it's because he had the grace to say, I have things to say if you'll listen, without forcing them, which I wouldn't have taken well because I was immature then. He's older than me by, at least months. I sometimes wonder what this world would be like if we would have had a different orientation to coming to this part of the world, not as an empty world for us to fill with whatever we wanted, but a new part of the world that was filled with people who thought differently than we did, in interesting and good ways. I've never learned anything from somebody who thinks exactly the same as I do, because it doesn't work that way. I learn from people who know more than I do, who approach things from a different perspective, who think differently, and I'm grateful for it. And one of the things that I do, as I can in the Ministry of Reconciliation, is I try to be alert for those opportunities to listen to other people, to other cultures, to other traditions. And I don't always see something there that fits for me, but I do often. I think about God in a different way because of my indigenous siblings. I think about the earth in a different way because of my interaction with indigenous people who just look at the earth differently, not as a thing to be exploited, to be taken at just whatever of value out of it, but to work in partnership with it. It's not easy, but it's rewarding. Like I tell my kids, well, I told my kids enough that they got tired of hearing it, that nothing of value doesn't come with some work. And it's taken me some work to reshape how I think about the world. I was born in northern BC and grew up in Alberta, where if it's black and in the ground, let's get it out of there. Do something with it. But by listening, by being open to other perspectives, and on this Sunday, I think particularly of the perspectives of some of the indigenous people that I've had the great grace to be in their circles, I think I'm a better person. I think I understand God better. And I think we can all do those things as treaty people. We ourselves will not solve the issue. It's too big for any single person. But we can solve the issue for us. We can make ourselves better and we can do our part wherever possible to make it better for others. And I hope you'll find those ways, you'll be alert to that opportunity when it happens, because it's worth it. It's worth it to see God, to understand God, to understand everything in a broader, more inclusive, and certainly a more God-honoring way. Amen.